He's Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to the premiere of the Jack Benny Show from 1940. We are also going to bring you the Fred Allen Show from 1940. And I've decided to bring them to you in this fashion so that you can hear the Jack Benny Show. And then the Fred Allen Show is from a few days later, and sometimes Fred Allen will refer to the Jack Benny Show and talk about it. Now, the other thing that's the Jack Benny tie-in for this year on Fred Allen is that it features Kenny Baker as the tenor for Fred Allen for this year. And it is one of my favorite seasons of the Fred Allen Show. It might be my favorite season of all of Fred Allen. And he really hits it out of the park over and over and over again. So I would highly suggest listening to Fred Allen Show as well, especially tonight. Because tonight's episode features Jerry Siegel, who is the writer that created Superman. And Superman he created him in 36 or 34, but it really started to come out in 1938. So it's 2 years old at this point. And who knew at that time it would run all the way to the present. So it's neat to hear the original creator and so close to when he created it, just a couple years after it started coming out and being published. So it's a neat little interview on the Fred Allen Show, and I hope you listen into that. But without further ado, here are both shows. I hope you like them, and I hope you keep tuning in every week for more Jack Benny and Fred Allen. Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to our very first episode of the 1940-1941 season of the Jack Benny Show. This is from 70 years ago this week, and what a great opening show this is going to be. It's a kind of a strange, different beginning, which makes it fun. And the first voice you'll hear is, of course, Frank Nelson, who is the wonderful, of course, actor who says yes whenever Jack asks him questions and things. I don't think they had developed the yes yet with him, but it's neat to hear Frank Nelson in these early shows. He really starts appearing very frequently in about 1945 on. But at this point, he's not in them all the time, but it's great to have him aboard. Great cast on this episode. Another person on this episode playing the Blue Fairy is Mary Kelly. And Mary Kelly, I don't know if I've talked about her before, but Mary Kelly is the woman that Jack Benny almost married before he married, of course, Mary Livingston, who was really Sadie Marks. He really loved Mary Kelly, and they were deeply in love. But it seems like due to their religious differences, with Jack being Jewish and Mary Kelly not, that they thought they would have some major issues, and it was decided to not get married. And I can't remember if Mary Kelly went off and married someone else quickly and without Jack really knowing. I can't remember how that all played out. But anyway, if you want, pretty much any of the books about Jack will have sections about Mary Kelly and their relationship. Anyway, so I thought it was pretty amazing that Mary Livingston would allow Mary Kelly to like be on this show, because she knew about that past too. But apparently at this point, Mary Kelly had gained a lot of weight. She wasn't getting a lot of parts, and so they were trying to help her out by giving her a chance to perform on Jack's show, and Jack had her on a number of different times. Anyway, so here you get a chance to hear Mary Kelly, one of Jack's early loves. And Verna Felton comes back on as Mrs. Day, Dennis's mom, and we have Ed Beloine, one of the writers, makes an appearance, and Bill Morrow makes an appearance too. So it's really cool. I love it when Ed Beloine comes on. I just love Ed Beloine's voice and the way he delivers lines. So that'll be interesting to hear him on the show. Apparently they're playing themselves. I haven't listened to this episode lately, but My list here says that Ed plays Eddie and Bill plays Bill, so I would assume they may be playing the writers, so we shall see how that goes. Anyway, I hope that you enjoy the show and keep tuning in every week for Jack Benny from exactly 70 years ago each week. And it took us a while to get started here. This season started far later than the 1950 season or the 1945 season. So, but certainly worth the wait. And so I hope you enjoy this great episode of the Jack Benny Show.
Fall is here. It is the sixth day of October and Jell-O is back on the air. But where are all our little playmates? Where are Donzie and Filzy and Mary and Dennis and Jackie Boy? Ah me, they're still asleep. For 15 weeks they have been in the arms of Morpheus. Wake up! Wake up, little playmates! Alas, they do not heed my summons. However, we must get them up. But how? How can we awaken our master of ceremonies? How can we arouse Jackie Boy?
Drop a quarter.
You're asleep.
Alas, my efforts are unavailing. If only someone with magic powers would assist me. But who? Who will it be?
I'll help you, kid. With my magic wand, I will awaken them.
You will awaken them? Who are you?
I am the Blue Fairy.
Then you must hurry, O Blue Fairy. Wake them all and do not tarry.
Fear not, my friend. I'll fly away. All of me and that ain't hay. Well, here I go.
Goodbye, Blue Fairy.
So long, kid. Wake up, Don Wilson, you big lug. It's time we heard a Jell-O plug.
Oh, thanks, Blue Fairy. I heed your call. Hand me my girdle from off the wall.
Here you are. Dennis. Oh, Dennis Day, jump out of bed. On your feet, not on your head.
Oh, I'm tired.
Dennis, wake up and get dressed.
But gee whiz, Ma, I'm sleepy.
Dennis Day, you get right over to the studio. Mr. Benny will be furious if you're late.
Okay. Do I have to wash behind my ears?
What for? He doesn't.
That's a lie. That woman better watch out.
Curly-headed maestro. Oh, little Phil Harris, come blow your horn. The cow's in the meadow, the sheep's in the corn.
Corn?
That got him.
Who are you, babe?
I am the Blue Fairy.
Well, come on in.
This is a fantasy.
Livingston, sound asleep in the land of Nod. But I, the Blue Fairy, will awaken her.
Some fairy. She couldn't fly with three motors.
Mary, don't spoil the illusion.
This is a fine way to start our first program.
Well, can you think of something better?
Anything.
Oh. Go ahead, Fairy, and wake her up.
When is she going to wake up the audience?
Never mind. Get going, Fairy.
Oh, Mary Liv, it's time you woke and told us all a funny joke. So open your eyes and don't be drowsy.
Oh, boy, what a lead.
Give me that wand.
Ouch!
All right, now wake me up.
Jack Benny snores so rich and deep. For 15 weeks he's been asleep. But now he must awake, you know, and run his good old Jell-O show. Awake, awake, awake. The sun is peeping over the hill and birds are singing by the mill. Forsake, forsake, forsake my slumber. Wake up, Jack Benny.
Arouse from his slumber. Will he ever wake up?
I don't know. Hey, Eddie, will he ever wake up?
I don't know. Hey, Bill, will he ever wake up?
I don't know. Hey, Sam!
Never mind, I'm up!
My goodness!
J-E-L-L-O.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Shout, I Am an American. Well, friends, I know you're all anxious to get on with the show, and so for that reason, I'm not going to take the time right now to tell you about Jell-O. I'm not going to say a word about how popular Jell-O is with just about everybody the country over. I'm not going to tell you that Jell-O is simply tops for gay, tempting color and wonderful extra-rich flavor. I won't stop now to point out that Jell-O is a quick, easy dessert to make or that it's delightfully inexpensive. And I'm not even going to mention that you can get Jell-O in six delicious flavors. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. I'd like to tell you all these things, ladies and gentlemen, but there just isn't time right now. So, on with the show. And, there isn't time either to tell you that you ought to get some Jell-O tomorrow without fail. Shout, I Am an American, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the first time this season, I bring you a man who returns to the air, fresh as a daisy, gay as a daffodil, modest as a violet, and rugged as a sweet pea, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Jell-O again, this is your favorite flower talking. And Don, before we go any further, what did you think of that novel opening to our first program? You know, where we're all supposed to be asleep for 15 weeks. Wasn't that whimsical?
It certainly was, Jack.
And clever, too. You know, I wrote and produced it myself. Did you like the idea of the Blue Fairy?
Yes, that was novel. Who is she, anyway?
Well, I don't know her name, Don, but she came to us through the courtesy of the Great Lakes Dredge and Dock Company.
Ha, 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 ha.
her freight bill was something awful in there. Well, anyway, Don, here we are starting our seventh season for Jell-O. For 7 years, you and I and our little gang have been with the same sponsor.
Yes, sir. 7 years on one job.
You know, Don, we're either loyal or in a rut. But who knows, we might be with the same sponsor 7 more years. Or 10. Or 20.
If he ever tunes in on us, we're cooked.
Well, look who's here. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mary. Hello. How are you?
Well, did you hear that ovation, Mary? Applause, cheers, whistles. I can't understand it.
I can.
Same modest, assuming, unassuming little girl, huh? Fine thing for you to say.
Aw, Jack, who are you kidding? Every actor loves applause, and you know it.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Mary's right, Jack. There's a certain amount of ego in every one of us.
Now, wait a minute, Don. I was in vaudeville for a good many years, and my only thought was to entertain. Applause meant absolutely nothing to me.
Oh, no? Tell them about the time you're going to kill yourself in Toledo.
Well, even the ushers didn't applaud there. Besides, I had no intention of killing myself.
And what were you doing with that rope in your dressing room?
I hung my laundry on it. Now, let's not start our first program by being personal. Let's talk about something else. What'd you do this summer, Mary?
I was asleep till that dredge woke me up.
Now, cut that out. You're not supposed to take that literally. It was just a delightful fantasy.
Why, Jack, you ought to be ashamed of yourself writing a corny thing like that.
Who said I wrote it?
You did.
Oh. Well, as long as I'm trapped, I wrote the music, too. Anyway, it was a very novel opening for our first program, and I'm proud of it.
Proud of it? Why, it didn't even make sense.
Oh, it didn't, eh? Well, they said the same thing about A Midsummer Night's Dream. And look how successful that was.
Yeah, I hear Shakespeare just built a home in Brentwood.
That's Abe Shakespeare from Universal. Anyway, Mary, you don't appreciate how hard it is to get new ideas and things. You know, Don, I sat up night after night working on an idea.
Hey, Jack.
What?
Here comes Sierra Sue.
Oh, yes. Hello, Phil.
Hiya, folks. Here's the man you've been waiting for. Get them hands out of your pockets.
Well, Phil, hello.
Hi, Don.
Hi, Don.
Oh, sure. He would ask for it.
I appreciate that, folks. You know, applause is food for an actor, so thanks for the lunch.
Ha ha, that's a Lulu.
Well, you didn't disappoint us, Phil. You came right back the way you left. Not a kernel missing. Well, Phil, I hear you had another successful tour this summer on those one-night stands.
Yes, sir. We covered about 16,000 miles, one town after another.
Boy, that's what I call a tough grind. I wouldn't go through that for all the money in the world.
What?
You heard me. I don't know how that guy does it. Phil, why do you only stay one night in a town and then move on?
Love 'em and leave 'em, that's my motto.
I know, I saw it tattooed on your chest. You know, Phil, you ought to take a vacation in the summer instead of working and traveling around the country. Look at those bags under your eyes.
Oh, they're not so big.
I like to have them full of radium, that's all. Bruv.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. I look all right, and so do my boys. Why don't you say something about the new suits they're wearing?
Well, I've got to admit, they're all spruced up today. I notice another thing. They smell so sweet, you know?
Why, sure. They all got perfume on.
Perfume, eh? That's all right.
It'll never replace the old-fashioned bathtub.
Never mind. With them, I'll settle for anything. But at that, Phil, I must compliment you on the way
Say,
that...
Jack.
What?
Here comes Baby Dumpling.
Oh, yes. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, well, hello, Billy.
Well.
Gee, was all that applause for me?
Yes, sir, Dennis. Every bit of it. The people are glad to see you back again.
Then I ought to get more dough.
Sit down, you money-mad ham. It's a fine entrance you made, Dennis. The first crack out of the box, you want more money. You know, this is only your second year in show business, and if you ask me, you're doing all right.
Well, Kenny Baker's got a yacht.
Never mind Kenny Baker. And it leaks. More money, more money. Let me tell you a little story, Dennis. Something you ought to know and think about. When I was a kid your age, life wasn't as easy for me as it is for you. Well, I used to walk around the streets of Waukegan selling newspapers. I was hungry. Yes, and I was barefoot.
I bet it was snowing, too.
You said it. Why, Dennis, when I used to come home at night after tramping the streets all day selling those papers, my little feet were swollen and bleeding.
Where'd you get the blood?
I had it then. But I was happy, Dennis. Happy because I was struggling to achieve success, slow but sure. And that's why you should be happy, too.
Gee, I'm sorry, Mr. Benny. Maybe I ought to take a cut.
A cut?
Look at his ears go up.
They didn't budge. Now, listen, Mary, I wasn't going to mention it because I wanted it to be a surprise to the whole gang. But when you each get your check tomorrow, you'll find a raise. A substantial increase.
I don't believe it, but say it again.
Well, don't act so surprised. I gave you all a raise last year, didn't I?
Sure, but right afterwards you sold a stock in your ostrich farm.
My ostrich farm? What's wrong with that? They lay eggs every day of the week.
And on Sunday, you take over.
Mary, May Company. Now, Dennis, if you can forget about Kenny Baker's yacht long enough, how about singing a song for us?
Okay.
Go ahead, Dennis. Wait a minute. Come in.
Pardon me, are you Jack Benny?
Yes.
My name is Gross. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions?
Why, no, I'm never too busy for an interview.
Well, first of all, what are your plans on the radio this year?
Oh, I don't know. We're going to keep about the same formula and style as in the past. Yet, we hope to be topical and keep up with the times.
I see. And, are you planning any out-of-town trips during the season?
Well, we'll stay here in Hollywood until the middle of December, and then we'll probably go to New York for a month.
A month, eh?
Yes.
That'll bring you back about the
middle of January.
I see. And, are you going to close up your house in Beverly Hills while you're away?
Yes, I intend to, yes.
Well, I think that about covers everything. Thanks very much, Mr. Benny.
You're welcome. Oh, by the way, what paper are you with?
None. I'm a burglar. Goodbye.
Hey, come back here. Well, of all the nerve. Sing, Dennis.
Oh, Jack.
What?
You better take your mattress to the bank tomorrow.
I will. Don't worry.
The swallows come back to Capistrano. That's the day you promised to come back to me. When you whispered farewell in Capistrano, 'twas the day the swallows flew out to the sea. All the mission bells will ring, the chapel choir will sing, the happiness you'll bring will live in my memory. When the swallows come back Capistrano. That's the day I pray that you come back to me. While the altar candles burn, my heart is burning too. If you should not return, I'll still be waiting for you. When the swallows come back to Capistrano, that's the day I pray that you come back to me.
That was When the Swallows Come Back to Capistrano, sung by Dennis Day and accompanied by Phil, I'll Play Any Town Under 2,000 Harris. And Dennis, that was really a beautiful number.
Thank you, Mr. Benny.
And I love the thought, When the Swallows Come Back to Capistrano. Don, isn't that a grand title? Don, When the Swallows Come Back to Capistrano.
Oh, Jack, please.
Don, are you rebelling?
No, but I just think...
Don, When the Swallows Come Back to Capistrano.
Okay, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, whenever you swallow a dessert, make sure that it is genuine Jell-O.
That's better.
Whether you live in Capistrano or San Luis Obispo, always come back to your neighborhood grocer and ask him for a package of tempting economical Jell-O. It comes in 6 delicious flavors. So remember.
All right, Dennis.
Oh, I don't wanna.
Dennis!
Okay. When the swallows come back to Capistrano,
you will find that Jell-O's waiting there for you. Oh, Capistrano. There, that wasn't such a bad plug, was it? Did you write that, Jackson? I certainly did.
Take a bow and I'll punch you right in the nose.
Why don't you? Anyway, that was smart writing, Mary. You know, Don, I'm going to do a lot of that stuff this coming season. Write clever commercials and fantasies, all kinds of sketches and things.
It's a lot of work, isn't it?
Oh, I don't mind. In fact, I get a kick out of it. Hey, Jackson, what's the idea of all this writing all of a sudden?
Last Tuesday, he found a fountain pen.
That has nothing to do with my talent. Say, Don...
I suppose if he found a canoe, you'd want to be an Indian guide.
Silly, me an Indian guide. Say, Don...
A couple of feathers in your hair wouldn't hurt.
All right, forget it. I found a fountain pen on Sunset Boulevard. I put an ad in the paper. Nobody claimed it. So it's mine.
What paper did you put the ad in?
In the Louisville Courier Journal. It ran 3 days. Now, Don...
Gee, does Sunset Boulevard go that far?
Get a map and don't annoy me. Now, Don, if I can get a word in edgewise here... We're almost through with this first program, aren't we?
Just about, Jack. All we have left is Phil's number, and that'll about wind up the show.
Well, then, look. I'm going to run along. You see, Rochester's downstairs waiting for me in the car, and I've got to rush home. You see, I'm writing an article for the Saturday Evening Post, and I want to get it off tonight.
You must have found a bottle of ink, too.
Yes, and some stationery and stamps and everything. Is it okay, Don?
Sure, go right ahead, Jack. I'll take care of everything.
All right. Well, so long, Don. So long, fella. See you next Sunday.
Goodbye, Don.
Take care,
Jack.
See you next week.
Well, come on, Phil. Let's get going.
Okay, Don. Hit it, boys. Rochester, Rochester, watch out. You don't honk at red lights, you stop for them.
Well, our brake's in a delicate condition.
Well, then you can shut off the motor.
Boys, if I shut off this motor, even the Blue Fairy couldn't start it.
Just watch your driving, that's all.
Okay. I sure liked your program tonight, boss.
You did? Well, that's good. Which gag did you like the best?
The one about you giving everybody a raise. That was a good one.
It wasn't any joke, Rochester. I'm giving the whole cast more money this year.
You are?
Yes.
Well, boss, has my status quo been affected by this bolt from the blue?
What do you mean?
In other words, when I get my check tomorrow, am I going to be grinning or groaning?
Now, Rochester, let's get this straightened out right now. When I say I'm giving a raise, I mean I'm giving an increase to my associates on the radio.
Uh-huh.
You see, you're connected with me in a private capacity. That is, you're in a domestic category.
Uh-huh.
So in a nutshell, Rochester, I regard you as just a butler, not an actor.
Just a butler?
Yes.
Boss, did you see our last picture?
Don't change the subject. Anyway, Rochester, I can't see where you have any cause for complaint. You're doing all right.
Bill Robinson's got a yacht.
I don't care what Bill Robinson's got. And if you're not careful, you're liable to be first mate on it. Never saw anybody in my life that complains about... Hey, wait a minute. Rochester. Rochester, stop the car.
What's the matter, boss?
Quick, stop the car. pardon me, miss. Are you going towards Beverly Hills? I said, are you going towards Beverly Hills? Drive on, Rochester. Oh, well. Stop laughing. We're not home yet.
You'll never give up, will you, boss?
Never mind. And getting back to the salary you're so dissatisfied with, let me tell you a little story, Rochester. When I was a kid in Waukegan, I used to walk around the streets selling newspapers. I was hungry. And yes, I was barefoot, too. But I was happy. I didn't mind struggling because I knew that someday all my work...
The end of summer, ladies and gentlemen, always brings with it a new problem for the housewife. The problem of what to serve for salads now that summer fruits and summer vegetables are on the way out. Well, one answer is Jell-O's delicious grapefruit and grape salad. Both grapefruit and grapes are in season right now, and blended with rich strawberry Jell-O, they make one of the most colorful and exciting salads you ever tasted. Just prepare one package of strawberry Jell-O as you usually do, chill until slightly thickened, and fold in sections of one grapefruit, diced, and 1 cup of halved white grape, seeded. Then mold, and you have a real distinctive treat, one that you can serve either as a salad or dessert. Incidentally, if you haven't enjoyed strawberry Jell-O recently, you'll find that it's now better than ever. Strawberry Jell-O, like raspberry Jell-O, has a new improved flavor obtained by using a natural flavor base, enhanced with a specially processed artificial flavoring, which gives it a rich, distinctive goodness. So get some strawberry Jell-O tomorrow and make up this grand combination of golden grapefruit, white juicy grapes, and bright red strawberry Jell-O.
This is the last number of the first program in the new Jell-O series, and we'll be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. Say, Phil.
Yeah, Mary?
How about taking me over to the Wilshire Bowl tonight?
I'm taking the Blue Fairy.
Oh, that's right. There wouldn't be room for both of us. Good night, folks.
News for thrifty housewives. Log Cabin Syrup for less money. Popular table size, not more than 18 cents in most stores. Ask your grocer about his new low price. Remember, same luscious Log Cabin Syrup. Same high quality, same mellow flavor. Only the price has changed. Tomorrow, buy Log Cabin Syrup at the new low price. The lowest in history. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking, bringing you another great episode of the Fred Allen Show from 70 years ago this week. And this one features Jerry Siegel, who is the writer of Superman, who created Superman, which is pretty cool, along with Schuster. Siegel and Schuster are the two that created Superman. Schuster did the art, and Jerry Siegel did all the writing. And it's interesting to think at this point in time, Superman had only been published for a couple of years, but by now he was in comic strips across the country. He was certainly in comic books where he got his start, and he also had a radio show by now. So it's pretty amazing to think of how quickly that all caught on. And here's a 25-year-old who apparently they developed Superman like 7 years previous to this. So he must have been just a teenager, of course, when they developed him. And then and everyone pretty much rejected Superman until finally DC Comics, at that point called National Periodicals, accepted it and said, okay, we'll do Superman. And so they did. And the rest is definitely history. But it's neat to hear a interview with Jerry Siegel in his prime. And it's a fun little interview, so I hope you enjoy that section of the show. I've retitled the show to include that information because I think a lot of people would look for this show and not know what's in it because it didn't say that in the original title. This is one of those things where I heard the interview before, and I always wondered, when I hear part of a show, I always think, oh, somebody somewhere probably has the whole show and they just excise this part. I wish I could hear the whole show. Well, now here is an opportunity to hear the whole show. And the part that where they've cut it out, if you've ever heard it in isolation, this interview, the sound quality is horrible on that. And who knows where they got it or how many generations down the line it was or whatever. But what's nice is this episode has the interview actually sounding really good. And so I'm glad about that. I mean, it doesn't sound terrific. I mean, I've been very happy with the sound quality of these Fred Allen shows from 70 years ago. They're not, certainly not high quality or anything like that, but they certainly are listenable and enjoyable. So, and some of the Fred Allens, as you've heard in the past year, are pretty questionable where you go, man, I have to really listen carefully to get the show out of this because there's so much static and everything. But luckily, these episodes, at least so far, cross our fingers, are sound pretty good sound quality. Again, the music is not part of the show. They've cut that out. But at least we still have Kenny Baker and the banter and all of those things going on. I just loved last week's episode. It was my favorite episode that I played of any of the shows last week because I'd never heard it before. And just listening to it, I just so enjoyed it. I enjoyed Alan Reed's part as the network executive with the sweaty hands. Just some funny. He had the best lines. I just love listening to Jack's show and Fred's show because they're not afraid to give the best lines to the supporting players. They don't always have to have the best lines themselves, which is pretty cool. Anyway, enjoy this grand episode, and we'll be back next week for another episode of the Fred Allen Show. And I think we'll also have another Wednesday episode of the 1946-47 season. If you haven't listened to that, check out on Wednesday. We had another Fred Allen. Some weeks this year we'll have two or three Fred Allen shows, just depending on the week. Because certainly in November we'll hit the big show. and we hit the big show. Fred Allen was almost, he was at least a semi-regular on that show. And Tallulah Bankhead was the host, but she had some amazing players on that show, including Phil Harris sometimes, certainly Fred Allen a lot of the time, Bob Hope, Martin Lewis. You're just going to hear a lot of big names on the big show, but we'll get into that more next time. So, enjoy. See you next time.
We present the only actor to ever hitch a wagon to himself to make himself a star. That Mickey Rooney of yesterday, Fred Allen in person.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now, before we start, I want to thank you for the many kind letters and wires that came in last week after our first program. It's certainly nice to have you welcome our little gypsy guild back on the air. You've made us all very happy. We are happy, aren't we, everybody?
No!
Yes, you've made us all very...
I'm not happy, Fred.
Who said that?
I did. Jimmy Wallington.
Well, what's wrong, Jimmy? You're not happy? Why, I thought your announcing went over with a bang last week.
Oh, it wasn't my announcing, Fred. I know when I said Texaco products are the best, I was a ball of fire.
I'll say you were. That's not only one man's opinion, yours. That's mine, too. That's two men's opinion.
Thanks, Fred.
I'll say you were a ball of fire, Jimmy. Of course, after you burned out a little, you played it as a clinker, but... The spark was there. Now, why aren't you happy?
Well, do you remember last Wednesday as the show started?
Yeah.
I stepped down to introduce myself.
Yeah?
And you cut right in and started the overture.
No, I didn't.
I didn't like that at all.
I didn't think it was nice of you a bit. I didn't start the music, Jimmy. It was Al Goodman in that cheap tuxedo he had on last week. Al began perspiring. The tuxedo coat started shrinking. Al's right sleeve closed in, his arm flew up, and the band started playing. I couldn't help it.
Well, it ruined my reception.
Well, no wonder you're not happy. We'll make it up to you right now. Ladies and gentlemen, could we have an old, used reception for Jimmy Wallington? Could we just... Thank you, thank you. As of last week, there you are, James. Now, are you happy?
Oh, you bet. I'll be right home, Ma.
He won't either. He's portraying a part there. Now that we're now that we're all happy...
Happy, he says.
Who was that?
Me, Al Goodman.
Well, what are you unhappy about?
Last week you talked so long at the end of the show, I had to cut my last number.
You mean when you played We're in the Money, you shortchanged us?
Yeah, I had 2 bars of music left over.
Yeah.
Now I know how Schubert felt with his unfinished symphony.
And Blossom Time, too, you could... Well, no wonder you're unhappy, Al. We'll fix that right away. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Al Goodman will now give you the music he had left over from last week. Carry on, Mr. Goodman.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's different. That makes last week's mediocre show a sensation, Al. Now that'll be on the hit parade, just that much of it, too. But if anybody can pucker up quick enough to whistle it later on when it catches on. Well, now everybody's happy.
Hello, Mr. Allen.
Oh, hello, Portland. I hope you're happy about last week's program.
Yes, what do I care what people say?
Portland, didn't you read any of the reviews? Winchell, PM, Alton Cook, Ben Gross?
No, I was so happy, I wasn't taking any chances.
No kidding. Well, fine. Did your mother hear the show?
Oh, Mama couldn't miss it. She made plans.
How do you mean?
When you went off the air last June, Mama left the same station tuned in all summer. She just sat there and waited for you to come on again.
She was tuned into the station we were on last year and heard this program last Wednesday night?
Yes. Mama said when you started joking about Ida and your 5 daughters... She just about died.
Well, I suppose... That about comes under the heading of ad-libbing, doesn't it? I suppose when I sang I love to spend this hour with you, your mother ran amok.
Oh, I'll say. Mama put in her teeth just to whistle.
She did? Well, it was certainly nice of your mother to get out her smirking crockery just for that.
Oh, Mr. Allen.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me, Portland. What is it, Kenny?
I want to apologize for last week.
Apologize for what?
For all the laughs I got on the program.
Well, you don't have to apologize.
Go ahead, hit me. I deserve it. I'm a bad boy.
Why should I hit you?
That's what they used to do on the Jell-O program.
The comedian on that program...
Once I got five laughs and he beat my brains out.
Well, why didn't you beat his brains out?
Somebody beat me to it.
Well, that seems to be the consensus. Well, you don't have to worry about provoking mirth on this program, Kenny.
But I'm supposed to be a singer, and last week I got all the laughs.
Well, no, you didn't. I got a lot of laughs.
Oh, you're just saying that to make me feel good.
No, I'm not. I got plenty of laughs last week.
Honor bright?
Honor bright.
Hope to die?
Well, not too often in this...
Well, all right. I don't feel so bad about it now.
Well, fine. Let's just forget the whole thing.
I'll just stick to my singing.
Yes.
If I keep getting all the laughs and singing, too, one of us will have to go, won't one?
Yes. One will.
It won't be you, will it?
No, Kenny, it won't be I.
I get it.
Now, look, Kenny, this program is a happy little family. On our show, no one person is responsible for a laugh.
No?
No, of course not. Now, I'll show you how a laugh works out. Listen.
Yes, sir.
Well, first, there are the gag writers who steal the joke. That's first. Then there is the publicity man, Fizdale, who lets the public know a week in advance through all the papers that the joke is coming. Then the joke is finally told on the program. Jimmy Wallington signals the audience that a joke has been committed. The cast runs up and down the stage making faces. The drummer stands up and drops his trousers, and the laugh follows.
Gosh.
So you see, Kenny... hardly worth waiting for a line like that. So you see, Kenny, you don't have to worry. Last week, you were but a cog in the machinery of mirth. Now, is that clear?
Yes, it's like that old saying, it shouldn't happen to a cog.
Yes, you're perfectly... Now, excuse me, Kenny, come in.
Telegram for Mr. Allen.
Oh, thank you. Here's a nickel for you.
No, thanks. I'm an eccentric millionaire.
Sorry, I didn't recognize you, J.P.
Here's a nickel for you.
Oh, thank you. Say, look, everybody. It's a wire from our sponsor.
Well, what does he say, Fred?
Let me see here. I heard your program last night. Where was the Texaco theme song? I'm listening again tonight. Get it? Gosh, I've got to get a theme song, Jimmy. Where can I get a Texaco theme song in a hurry?
Well, let's see.
If two songwriters don't come through that door, this isn't radio. Come in.
We're two songwriters.
This is radio. And I'll wager that you boys have a Texaco theme song with you.
You are positively psychic, brother.
Get a load of this.
A one, a two.
There are miles. You ride my bicycle.
By bicycle. There
are miles. You ski in snow.
In the snow.
There are miles. You hop along on pogo sticks.
On sticks.
While you're bouncing to and fro.
To and fro.
And there are miles. You walk for a pack of camels. There are miles. You skate on ice like glass.
I'll take it.
about the miles that fill you most with a gladness of the miles using Texaco gas. Fill up your tank.
That little guy has been singing through a Venetian blind. His voice is not only flat, it only comes at you so long. And well, that's done it. Say, Kenny, while we're waiting to scrape that song off the acoustics, will you sing something to sort of clear the atmosphere up?
Okay, how about my Lindy Lou?
Well, if it's all right with her, it's all right with me.
Thank you. Thank you. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you a surprise guest, a man who plans a startling exhibit at the coming New York Automobile Show. I give you then Mr. Dinwiddie Throb, inventor of the soil-proof windshield. Now, Mr. Throb, just how did you work out this soil-proof windshield?
Well, first, I made a thorough survey of windshields in general.
Yeah?
I found that the average windshield is dirty only on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Well, therefore, in developing my windshield, I put the outside on the inside.
Really?
Eureka, I had it.
Well, it is semi-amazing, but I don't get it.
Well, it's very simple. You see, the outside, which normally gets dirty, is now on the inside, so it stays clean. And the inside, which stays clean, is now on the outside, so it doesn't get dirty.
Look for me at the auto show, Mr. Allen.
Well, why should I go down cellar just for that? I'll look for you, Mr. Throb, but I doubt if I'll find you. What do you think, Jimmy?
Well, I don't know, Fred. But here's the man who can tell you what you will find, Larry Elliott. The New York Automobile Show opening this Saturday, October 12th, and similar shows throughout the country will give motorists a close-up of the great 1941 models. And every streamlined beauty will hold out the exciting invitation to drive a completely new car for the first time. To enjoy this...
Thank you. Al Goodman and his men who have a rendezvous with rhythm and have just kept it, have only now completed Begin the Begin. And now you got around to that kind of late, didn't you, Al? It's been out 8 or 9 years, hasn't it, Begin? What are you taking from an old hit parade or something? And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Mr. Allen!
Yes, Portland?
There's a lady here. She says it's very important.
Well, bring her over. It's probably an old fan that's winded.
Mr. Allen, we'll see you, miss.
Thank you, cherub.
Well, I'm very busy, madam. There is something you want?
Yes, Mr. Allen. Will you donate 1 minute to humanity?
1 minute?
Yes. May I use your microphone for just 60 seconds?
Well, why pick on my program?
I've tried all the others. We the People, the Goodwill Court, Hobby Lobby.
And?
It's the same old story. They offer me money, automobiles, and advice, but they won't give me time.
You can't get a minute?
Even Bulova has turned me down. I must have 60 seconds.
At my microphone here?
Yes. I have a message for the world. It is urgent.
Who are you?
I am Madame Lazanga.
Oh. I'll be happy to announce you. Stand by, world. You are about to hear an important message comes to you from Madame Lazanga. Madame Lazanga.
The seventh lesson is ready.
That is all a conjunction. An old butt fell out of the script. That is all, madam.
Yes, thank you. I am off.
Well, you've got plenty of company around here. Portland, lock that door, will you? I've got to get on with our guest.
Oh, is it anybody we know?
Why, certainly is. Who is the most popular comic strip character current in the newspapers today?
I give up.
It's Superman.
You mean our guest tonight is Superman?
No, not Superman. Our guest is the man who, we put a traffic cop there so you can get back and forth easier. Our guest is the man who originated Superman, Portland. He has written all of Superman's exploits since this idol of millions made his first public appearance. He's Mr. Jerry Siegel. Good evening, Mr. Siegel.
Good evening, Fred.
So you are the man behind Superman, Mr. Siegel.
No, I'm just one of the men, Fred.
Yeah?
I write the situations and the dialogue. And the strip is drawn by my collaborator, Joe Shuster.
Well, you seem rather young to be the instigator of this highly successful feature, Mr. Siegel. How old are you?
25.
And how long have you and Mr. Shuster been working on your high-voltage Robin Hood?
We started about 8 years ago, but Superman has been in print only the past 2 years.
Well, what caused the delay? Cirrhosis of the batteries?
No, Fred. It took us 6 years to sell Superman. He was turned down by almost every comic editor in the country.
Well, they laughed at Fulton with his steamboat, you know. I guess around your hometown, Superman was known as Siegel's Folly. Tell me, where and when did your strip first appear?
In May 1938, Superman came out in a magazine called Action Comics.
Was he well received?
The strip attracted so much attention that the publishers decided to give Superman his own magazine.
And then his popularity increased by leaps and bounds.
Yes, Fred. Today, Superman is in 218 newspapers, reaching 20 million people. He's in magazines, on the radio, and now he is going to appear in Paramount shorts.
Well, who is Superman really supposed to be, Mr. Siegel? He isn't just old Frank Merriwell with a dynamo in his union suit, is he?
No, Fred. Superman is a super being who came from the planet Krypton. He uses his tremendous powers to fight evil and injustice.
Well, he can do about anything, can't he?
Mm-hmm. Superman can run faster than a bullet travels. He can lift an ocean liner out of the water. Why, he can even stop a train with his bare hands.
Can he open a Pullman window?
Easily.
What a man. Well, I noticed that Superman is always benefiting humanity.
Yes, Fred. He saves people from floods, stops wars, and he's always breaking up crime rings.
Well, fortunately, Superman only exists in your imagination, Mr. Siegel. If he stamped out all of our crime, J. Edgar Hoover would be reduced to playing bits on gangbusters. So how far ahead do you have to write your strips?
I usually keep 3 months in advance.
Oh, you're so afraid of your syndicated Frankenstein?
No, it's Mr. Ellsworth, the editor, and my wife. They get after me.
Why don't you sic Superman on them? It must be a wonderful feeling, Mr. Siegel. 20 million people waiting with bated breath to see if Superman is going to pull up the Holland Tunnel and blow the perisphere through it for a spitball. And you are the only man in America who really knows what's going to happen.
I don't feel any different, Fred.
Oh. You're just being modest, Mr. Siegel. After all, you dominate a muscular marvel with a dual personality. When Superman isn't Superman, he's disguised as a reporter, isn't he?
Yes, he's Clark Kent, a meek little chap with glasses.
When Clark has to perform a miracle, he switches to that Superman harness, huh?
That's right. He wears athletic tights and a long cloak.
Well, what I can't figure out is this, Mr. Siegel. Now, how does he change his clothes so fast?
Well, after all, he's Superman, Fred.
I wouldn't care if he was Gypsy Rose Weinstein. Nobody can get into that long underwear ensemble in less than 5 minutes. Now, how does Superman do it?
Well, confidentially, Fred, he wears his outfit under his business suit.
Oh, when he's Clark Kent, he has those streamlined Bal Brigands on underneath, huh?
Right, he's always ready for action.
Well, if he wears woolen underwear all the year round, he sure gets action. Well, thanks a lot, Mr. Mr. Siegel. I've certainly enjoyed this opportunity to get the lowdown on Superman.
It's always a pleasure to talk about my protege, Fred.
Well, confidentially, if your Jumbo Peter Pan can use a part-time job, I'm going to have a little chore coming up around here about the first of the year. Superman is good at lifting things, isn't he?
Yes, Fred. You want him to pick up something?
My option.
Well, I'm afraid that's the one thing that even Superman can't do.
I get it.
Good night, Fred.
Good night, and thank you, Mr. Jerry Siegel. Ladies and gentlemen, from the current Broadway hit show, Louisiana Purchase, we borrow the popular quartet, the Martins, who sing for you now, Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead.
Say, what's this paper all over the floor? Kenny, did you tear up this driver's license here?
Yep, I'm through driving here in New York.
What's the matter? The finance people get your car?
No, it's those hand signals. Gosh, out in California, I never put out my hand when I was driving, unless I wanted to know if it was raining.
Oh, but here in New York?
I made a turn this morning without sticking out my hand, and you should have heard what a truck driver said.
What did he say?
It wasn't hello.
Or any part of it? Well, I can see. I can see you need some instructions in the hand signal code here, as we know it here in the East, Kenny. Now, I'll give you a quick digest.
Gee, thanks.
Now, the first signal you want to remember is the banana beckon.
The banana beckon?
The banana beckon, well known here in the East. In this signal, the hand is extended laterally with the fingers drooping down like bananas, only not yellow, unless the driver has jaundice, of course.
Well, what does that signal mean, Mr. Allen?
This signal, left turn, also right turn, stop, or back up.
Well, isn't there any signal that just means turn?
Well, that depends on where the driver's going to turn, Kenny. In one of the most important signals, he doesn't use his hands at all. The driver just uses his head.
Uses his head?
That's when he's going to turn into a Texaco dealer's station. Am I right, Jimmy?
Absolutely correct, Fred. Motorists really enjoy meeting Texaco dealers. That's because those... This is Mr. and Mrs. Average Man's Roundtable, where three persons selected from our studio audience are invited to give their opinions on a question that concerns some prominent issue of the day. Now, this little session is entirely unrehearsed. Something wrong, Fred?
I was trying to blow. I thought I had bubble gum, and I was trying to... But it wasn't bubble gum.
Well...
I think it's an old piece of glue. I just thought of... whoa, and my mouth snapped shut. Well, this is the question of the week, Jimmy, thank you. And the forum is all assembled here. You don't mind me,
do you? Quick. You know,
we're a little short.
That was fast, yeah.
Well, thank you. Well, you can go ahead and talk, and I'll talk over here. I mean, this is sanitary, two people using the same mic, you know. But our forum is officially open for the question of the week. Portland, if you'll kindly introduce our first guest.
Yes, Mr. Charles Ernest Wixendale from the Bronx, New York.
What, you sure you got the name? Thank you. Mr. Wixendale, is that correct?
That's quite correct.
May I ask your profession, what you do in the Bronx, please?
I'm a laundry root salesman.
A laundry root salesman?
That's correct.
With these your customers applauding? You can bring three or four customers down in the truck tonight. Well, what laundry do you work for up in the...
The Fox Square Laundry Company.
Fox Square, is that in the Bronx?
Yes, sir.
I said, do you have a slogan with your company?
Yes.
Does your company have a slogan? Most of them do. There's one up home has a slogan, a wet wash company. Why kill your wife? Let us do your dirty work. does your company have a slogan, Mr. Wixendale?
Our slogan is, we wash everything but the baby.
We wash everything. Hey, it's just as well if somebody accidentally left a baby in a laundry bag and you starched it and sent it back, and the people discovered they had a little stiff in the family at that age. All
Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Wichtendahl. And now, Portland.
Mrs. Josephine Robinson from Jackson Heights, Long Island.
Well, good evening. Thank you. That's Mayor LaGuardia. I guess he hasn't gone home yet. Mrs. Robinson, you live in Jackson Heights, do you?
Yes, I do, Mr. Allen.
You work over there?
No, I'm a housekeeper.
Oh, a housekeeper? Well, that's sort of, you're in the same business that Mr. Wichtendahl is in a remote way. You're doing flat work over there. But how are things over in Jackson Heights?
Well, very nice, Mr. Allen.
They are? Well, I'm certainly pleased to hear that. Well, as you drive out there on Roosevelt Avenue, Jackson Heights reminds me always of Neon and Neighbors. That's all you can see on the way out. Well, thanks a lot, Mrs. Robinson. It's very nice. It's building up. Over there quite a lot. They tell me they're so short on mice that many of the mice are winded running from house to house.
Mr. Bill Mullen from Old Orchard Beach, Maine.
Well, good evening, Mr. Mullen.
Hello, Fred.
Don't tell me you brought your fans down from Old Orchard Beach, Maine, too. Well, what are you down here for? Trying to get the main exhibit back from the World's Fair people?
Not quite, Fred. Just down and join the fair and going to the automobile show Saturday.
You can see the fair from here, really? You're enjoying it? Well, excuse me, Mr. Mullen. We're a little pressed for time, and I've got to carry on here. But that brings us to, if my head falls down, it will be a weight on my mind. Just lift it up, and I'll carry on. Well, that brings us to our question. And since controversial matters are denied our little catch-as-catch-can board here, we turn to the harmless subject of matrimony. An authority on the subject recently stated that most rifts in the marital lutes can be traced to the husband. This authority said that after marriage, many wives find that their husbands neglect the numerous attentions that were indulged in during the courtship. Flowers, candy, theater tickets are conspicuous by their absence. As husbands, order in the board, please. Husbands abandon these byproducts of romance. And so our question tonight is, do you think a husband should continue to court his wife after marriage? Now, Mr. Wichtendahl, let us speak as man to man. Do you think the husband should continue to pay those little attentions and carry on with the little niceties after marriage?
I do, sir.
You do?
Yes.
You often show up, come in on the laundry truck at night with a bag of jelly beans. Without thinking about it,
yes, sir.
You do? Are you happily married?
Very happily.
Who does your laundry? Well, congratulations, Mr. Wichtendahl. And now, Mrs. Robinson, what do you think about... This man is distracting me. Go away. So much of him, he can distract you from all angles. But what do you think of the question? Do you think the husband should remain as attentive and shower the wife with gifts in later life?
I certainly think he should, Mr. Allen. I think it helps for a continued married life.
Mm-hmm.
A happily married life.
Well, how long have you been married, may I ask?
23 years.
20? Are you happily married?
I am.
See, you can get applauded for anything on the radio. All right, Mr. Mullen, are you married?
No, Fred, I'm not.
Well, then you are not very well qualified to cope with the question, are you?
No, sir.
Are you courting, are you?
No, but I'm willing.
Well, that brings our little forum to a close. I would say, I feel that we've accomplished practically nothing, and thank you all for your kind cooperation. Kenny Baker.
Yes, Fred?
Do you
need some more comedy?
Oh, excuse me. I'm so tired, I see your lines in my place. Well, not right now, comedy, Kenny. All the names will be synonymous in time. I think about now we can use a song.
All right, would you like to hear Maybe?
Why not? Jimmy, have you got a second to go over these figures with me here?
What figures, Fred?
Well, these things here. There's some statistics my personal research bureau has compiled on last summer's crop of automobile tourists, Jimmy.
I see.
Now, I know that you're an expert on motoring, so we should just listen to these and see if they sound correct. Check on them.
Why, surely, Fred, surely.
This first one here, during the touring season,
The past touring season, 593 motorists got themselves folded into their own road maps and were never heard from again.
Well, it sounds possible.
That's now the second one here. 7,654 people in trailers stepped out on the back porch while their trailers were in motion and woke up on Route 1 to find the trailers didn't have back porches.
Oh, now, Fred.
And one tourist, just one, Jimmy, had his car washed and didn't run into a dust storm the next day. Now, how do these figures sound? They gallopy to you? Are they accurate, you think?
Golly, I don't know, Fred. You know, there's only one statistic that I do know about last summer's tourists, and that's this. More of them used fire chiefs
of new Hollywood epics, but what about the bad pictures? The celluloid faux pas the public never sees. Now, tonight we preview a picture for you that recently had all Hollywood hushed up. A picture that closed the studio and put 200 executives back in the wholesale garment business. Overture, Al. This is the story of a Hollywood flop. Instead of screen credit, screen blame goes to the following persons. The genius who started the ball rolling.
I am Simeon Fink, the Hollywood producer. A Warner Brothers picture, The Seahawk, made a fortune. So I said to myself, with a sequel to The Seahawk, I will be a millionaire.
And today, Mr. Fink?
I'm a bum.
With a capital B?
With no capital at all.
Thank you. Before Mr. Fink could go into production, naturally, he had to have a story written. Well, sir, he called in the authors, Briskin, Braskin, and Breskin.
I am Briskin. I stole the story.
I am Braskin. I stole the dialogue.
I am Bruskin. I stole the credit.
I'm Shakespeare. Was I robbed?
The story, Bill, you laid an egg. The story ready. The story ready. The studio swung into action. They called in...
I am Duval Duval, the director. I called the sequel to The Seahawk, The Sea Buzzard.
Are you still directing, Mr. Duval?
Yes, I am directing traffic in North Hollywood.
The star of the picture was...
I am Horace Snide. I played the male lead in The Sea Buzzard. Everyone in Hollywood said I would go a long way.
And did you?
Yes, I am now living in Bayonne, New Jersey.
When The Sea Buzzard was finished, it was previewed. One man said...
I saw The Sea Buzzard. I refused to give it one bell.
Oh, are you a critic?
No, a good humor man.
There was only one other person involved in this celluloid catastrophe.
Yes, I am the ghost of Gideon Levy. I don't think $1 million to produce The Sea Buzzard.
Whatever became of you, Gideon Levy?
I saw the picture. Better death than dishonor.
Where are you speaking from?
Dante sends his regards.
Well, it's all inferno. There you have the story of The Sea Buzzard. The sequel to The Seahawk, ladies and gentlemen, a picture Hollywood hasn't dared to mention. We preview it for you here tonight. The story takes place in the year 1540 A.D. The pirate ship, the Sea Buzzard, is homeward bound on the high seas.
Master is, sir.
Reef the halyard.
Reef the halyard, it is, sir.
Vorpal the Crovney.
Vorpal the Crovney, it is, sir.
I caught you that time, Rose. That was marine double talk.
Sorry, Captain. I'm Vorpal the Crovney.
Hi, Bosun. I'm going after my cabin. I've got to step up a knothole in the ship's log. Sailing, sailing, sailing over the bounding foam. My stomach's going up and down. I should have left it home. Ahoy, Pigley! Where's that first mate of mine? Higley.
Here I am, Captain. I was standing watch.
Did sight any Spanish ships on deck?
Nearly one, Captain.
Sounds. Here I am, Captain Thorpe, master of the Sea Buzzard. The toughest pirate that ever plundered the Spanish main.
Oh, I see.
100 days in these waters.
Aye, and you've only plundered one ship.
Aye, and that a leaky herring trawler, the SS Lindes.
Well, look here. Why do we only go after Spanish ships, Captain?
Queen's orders, Pigleg. Spanish boats is carrying a succulent route to the New World. It must be a priceless growth. The Queen demands her cargo or this pungent herb.
What's it called, Captain?
Tis an odd name, Pigleg. The Spanish onion.
The Spanish onion? Blimey.
This may be news that a galleon has been sighted. Door away!
Hiya, Captain.
Fox, my lookout. Why ain't you up in the crow's nest or looking for prey?
Why, I came down to tell you...
To tell me what, Nate?
There's a a Spanish boat.
A Spanish craft? Quick, rogue, where is it?
It's over to the starboard, the stupor. It's on the starboard, but it's gone.
That's the 87 Spanish prize I have lost, Pigley. By the time that lookout says... For Spanish, they're out of sight.
Well, look here, why don't you sack that lookout, Captain?
I can't. The Nudnik is a nephew of Queen Guinevere. He come aboard with a letter from the Queen recommending him for lookout.
I say, look, sir, out to Porto.
Sounds, a ship.
Roger.
I'll hail her.
I say.
Ahoy there. What ship are you?
Ahoy there. What ship are you?
I asked you first.
I won't tell you who's this till you tell me who's that.
I'm the Sea Buzzard out of San Inador, heading for Newport. Who are you?
The Albany Nightboat out of 14th Street, heading for Yonkers.
That fool is in the wrong direction, the wrong ocean, and the wrong century.
Blimey, another one got away. You'll never get them Spanish onions for the Queen.
Why, matey, I can't trust that stuttering lookout. I'll stand watch myself. Get me my binocular.
Oh, sir, they're in the closet, in the locker here.
Open it up.
Blimey, there's a bloke in your locker, a stowaway.
Well, I'll be blowed. Who are you, mate?
I'm Kenny Baker.
What are you doing aboard?
Last Sunday, Dennis Day said I had a yacht, and this is it. Would you mind closing the door?
Why?
I think I'm going to be seasick.
Your word is good enough for me.
Shall I root him out, Captain?
No, matey, leave him be. There comes a time in every tenor's life when he can't handle a high sea. Who's that, Gabriel?
Now, look, Captain, the royal barge approaches. It's the Queen herself on deck.
She must have sailed out to find me in quest of them Spanish onions.
Her Majesty is coming down the gangplank. Her Majesty is approaching your cabin.
Let Her Royal Highness in, Pegleg.
Oh, sir.
Greetings, Your Majesty.
Greetings, Gate. I arrive in state.
Aye, Your Majesty.
You have carried out your Queen's command.
I have plundered the seven seas, Your Highness. In this chest here are Aztec trinkets of the purest gold, Nubian gems, Portuguese tapestries, and these strangely inscribed buttons I picked up off the coast of Maine.
And what says this quaint inscription?
Win with Landon. An old native battle cry, no doubt. These are indeed treasures rare.
What care I for treasures? Where are the Spanish roots I commanded you to fetch? Where are my onions?
Alas, I have known, Your Majesty.
No onions for your queen? You shall pay for this treachery with your head. The guillotine.
Queen Guinevere, not the guillotine.
Yes, the guillotine. The Gillette that follows through.
If I caught no Spanish ships, Your Highness, the blame is yours.
Mine, you rancid guppy.
Aye. Your stuttering nephew you sent aboard was my lookout.
My nephew I sent aboard?
Aye.
A shot. What was that?
Swab me scuppers. I'll soon find out.
Here, get me,
man. Be a lookout. The Queen's nephew.
This Lumpkin is not my nephew.
What?
I just caught him in time, sir. He was about to commit suicide.
Yes, let me go. I've got to kill myself.
Hold on, Forbes. Why, you ain't a stutterer.
No.
Your stuttering was a ruse.
Yes.
You let them Spanish ships get away for purpose.
Yes, I did it. I did it. Queen or no queen, I was determined she shouldn't have those onions.
Why, this is vitamin sabotage.
I knew why you wanted those Spanish onions, Your Majesty. You were tired of eating hamburger the old way. You had heard of a new way to cook this irksome ground meat with onions.
Yeah, a knight from the White Tower told me.
I knew once Your Majesty ate hamburger with onions, it would be the rage. Once the world knew about hamburger with onions, I would be through, bankrupt, out of business.
Then you are not simple Archie Forbes, yeoman lookout third class.
No.
Who are you, Lout?
I am Sir Lindsay Lazenby, the Piccalilli Baron.
The Piccalilli Baron?
Yes. You see, I had no choice.
He's right, Your Highness. Once the world is tasted a hamburger with onions, Piccalilli will be through.
I and avowed that day would never come.
Well, you've kept the onion from me, but you can't keep it from the wild. Centuries hence, all mankind will eat the onion.
Aye, and in every land, it'll be the breath of a nation.
When you operate the nation's fastest...
Next Wednesday night, the Texaco Star Theater brings you Your Song of the Week.
I got my thrill on Raspberry Hill, on Raspberry Hill.
Wait a minute. That's Blueberry Hill, not Raspberry, isn't it?
When I sing, I don't get the blueberry, brother.
And our guest will be...
Mr. Ernest Peabody, president of the Anti-Noise League. Is New York the noisiest city in the country? Will noise be noise? Tune in next Wednesday. Find out.
Thank you, and music.